Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win.
Hello, and welcome to Dog Show Mentor. This is Lee Whittier, founder and host. Today, we're fortunate to have with us Laura Reeves from the Pacific Northwest, who's here to talk to us about safe travels with dogs. Laura's second-generation breeder and AKC Breeder of Merit of German wire-haired pointers under the Scotia prefix. She's a longtime member of the Professional Handlers Association, and she's been handling since about 1994. Laura shows all breeds, and her exceptional skills have afforded her hundreds of group placements and bests in show. Laura has served her national club as AKC Gazette columnist, judges education chairman and member, president, vice president, and national events coordinator. Laura is also the voice of Pure Dog Talk podcast and organizer of related events such as judges roundtables at dog shows and junior showmanship fundraisers in association with the Professional Handlers Association. Delighted to have you here. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you, Lee. I really appreciate the invitation. This will be a lot of fun. So today we are talking about safe travels with your dogs. And we're talking about going to dog shows, typically, although sometimes, you know, we go on vacation, we take our pets. And when we're traveling with our dogs, we're thinking about different ways that we travel. You can travel in your van or your car. You can travel in your RV, and sometimes you travel by plane. So we're going to talk about these as three distinct categories of topics, areas that we can concentrate on, tips, suggestions, and ideas. And before we're finished today, I'd really like to talk about something that I think is too often overlooked in our sport, and that is safety. We travel by ourselves a lot, and not everybody has, as I had for many years, an Akita by my side. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. So let's start with how maybe the bulk of people travel, and that's in either your van or in your car, and you're staying in a hotel room. So I understand we have a pretty wide audience here. So some of you guys have just gotten your first show dog. Some of you guys have been doing this for 20 years. So I'll try and hit on a couple different topics covering the full spectrum here. Number one, first and foremost, I don't care how many years you've been doing this, pick up your dog's poopy, okay? Very important. The reason we don't have show sites, the reasons we don't have hotels, is because people don't pay attention to this very basic piece. Poop bags with you in your pocket, tied to your leash, however you need to do it. A lot of us old school people that use pooper scoopers instead of poop bags, takes a while sometimes to make that transition, but you have to remember to pick up after your dogs. Next important topic, please, please, please do not wash your dogs in the hotel bathtub. I know everybody does it. As my father used to say, if everybody jumped off a cliff, would you do it too? My point is, I don't care who says it's okay. It's not. It's rude. Wash your dog at home. Wash your dog at the show site. Hotels are where you sleep, not where you wash your dog. Okay, so with those two basic courtesy items out of the way, when you're traveling, always want to make sure that you have a leash for every dog in the vehicle and a gallon of water for every dog in the vehicle. These are really basic items that cover a lot of emergency situations. Summer traveling, winter traveling, doesn't matter. If you have a problem, you need to be prepared. And the way that you can be prepared is to make sure you have a leash, and if you need to get your dog watered, that you have a way to do that. Personally, I travel with water buckets clipped inside my dog's crates. Not everybody chooses that route, but I find that to be the most convenient to make sure the dog always has access to water. When you're packing your vehicle, and this is particularly true, I find, for a lot of exhibitors traveling, like, say, in a minivan or something along those lines, and we've all gotten expert over the years at the sort of Tetris puzzle of how much can you fit into one Dodge Caravan. I think it's important to remember that always in the back of your mind, you have to keep in mind ingress and egress in case of an emergency. If you are in an accident, how are you going to get those dogs out of there? That has to be part of your planning process. Every single one of us knows somebody that's been in an unexpected vehicle accident. And if you can't get your dogs out, you are potentially putting them in harm's way. So make sure as you're doing your packing process, can you get your animals out safely, quickly, and easily? In the summer months, always, 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 you want to make sure that you have extra shade cloths on hand. Again, in case of emergency, you never know when you're going to get a flat tire beside the highway. It's 100 degrees. You need to be able to keep your dog safe in that case. For people who are traveling in regular vans who don't have like a four-wheel drive option, make sure you've got chains in the winter. I don't know about the East Coast so much, but out here in the West where we have mountains, sometimes it happens. You get snow when you're trying to go somewhere. So I guess sort of the Boy Scout motto, always be prepared. Be prepared for every potential occurrence is pretty important. Now your next group, if you will, that we can talk about is traveling in your RV. And I know I personally love traveling in my RV. I like having all of my stuff in one place. I know a lot of other people would rather have the convenience of a hotel room, so each their own. When you're traveling in the RV, same thing, have enough leashes for all the dogs, have enough water for all the dogs. And no matter what vehicle you're traveling in, consider having a temperature monitor. In the summer months particularly, this is a really big deal. We have seen far, far, far too many situations where people did not have an awareness of the temperature inside their vehicle and animals were lost. This is preventable. I personally have a temperature monitor, but I almost never use it because if it's hot enough to be a concern, I don't leave the dogs unattended. And this is something that I'm going to just put out there for everybody to think about. These are our pets, or they are animals that are in our care, and they rely on us. And going to lunch with your friends or going to watch the group ring or whatever it is that seems so important at that time is never going to be more important than your animal's safety and well-being. And you don't know for sure that your car's not going to overheat while you run the AC unit in there. You don't know for sure that your generator's going to keep running. You don't know for sure that the electricity isn't going to blow. If it's hot, the very best guarantee of your animal's safety is direct supervision. Whether it's you, whether it's a friend, whether it's a trusted assistant. If you have someone with your animals at all times, you will know and be able to prevent any potential problem. So, temperature monitors, good. Best, direct supervision. Next thing you need to keep in mind with your RV particularly, since they are such wonderful holes in the ground into which we pour money, is maintenance. Make sure that your tires are good, that your generator has been maintained, that your generator has oil. For some people who aren't accustomed to the idea of RV, if you're not used to driving an RV, get to understand what your entire process is. They don't just sort of magically happen on their own. Generators have to have oil put in. Many of them have an altitude gauge. So your generator, you might get above a certain altitude and your generator won't have the proper mix of oil and gas and it'll turn itself off. And I know this from personal experience. So be aware of those sorts of things. Electricity is great. We love electricity. Plugging into electricity is wonderful. But if all you have is 110, which is the regular household outlet, two on top, one on the bottom, basic 110, please do not run your air conditioner unit on that. It cannot support it, and it will blow up the electricity for your vehicle. It'll flip a switch on your outlet. It will flip a switch at the power box. So all of these things are bad. Know about electricity. Know what 30 amp is. Know what 50 amp is. Know what you have and what it is capable of running in your vehicle. Okay, in either your van or your RV, you might be going to take a long trip. So long distance cross-country driving, I do a lot of this. I hate flying dogs, and so I drive. I've driven across the country and back more times than I want to count. So a couple tips for that. Try to get your dogs out every 4 hours, 6 hours max. Let them stretch their legs. Let them go potty. Let them run around a little bit. If you've got babies, obviously, or a senior dog, you're going to want to stop more frequently. But I know that if you're traveling with a lot of dogs, it's kind of a pain and it takes time out of your schedule. But that's what the dogs need to have to be comfortable. I frequently will try to make one stop. So a stop where I can get food and fuel and potty the dogs and potty me and do all of those things at once will at least help cut down your travel time. Plan for it. Plan ahead for relatively short mileage drives and being able to stop early enough in the evening that you can take everybody on a decent walk a couple times around the parking lot or wherever you're staying. This is what's going to help keep your dog mentally and physically fit on a long trip across country. When I have puppies or my toy breeds, I usually keep one little 2x4 X-Pen handy, kind of on the top of whatever I'm carrying, so that I can just put the puppies in there, put the toy dogs in there, whatever I need, and those dogs can be safely contained in their exercise pen while I'm walking a bigger dog or to keep them away from germs or whatever your situation. Keeping that lightweight exercise pen on the top of your stack makes things a lot easier. Another thing to think about when you have young dogs, particularly baby puppies or just young dogs that you're getting started with a traveling process, I don't feed them in the morning right before I leave. They can learn how to eat either super early in the morning so they have a couple hours after they eat, or they can eat a couple times later in the day, whatever it is. When you start a puppy out first thing in the morning with a full tummy, it's not uncommon that they're going to have some car sickness. So if they don't learn how to throw up every time they get in the car, this is a good way to prevent car sickness. I have not had a dog that was car sick in years because of this particular method of dealing with young dogs. Once they're older, they're used to things, that's fine. But don't offer the opportunity for a dog to learn how to become car sick. So then we can talk about going on airplanes. My very least favorite thing, but I know a lot of people do it and do it well. So a couple things to think about. Not all airlines are created equal when it comes to flying dogs. And I'm sure many of you are aware of this. Anybody that isn't, my personal recommendation, strong personal recommendation, is Alaska Airlines. I have found them to be the very best carrier for working with flying dogs, whether you're flying cargo or flying the dog as checked baggage. If you don't have access to Alaska Airlines, I'm sorry, but in the rest of the country, just be aware. Know the airline that you're working with. Know their regulations. Know that many, many times in today's society when we're flying dogs, the airlines are going to want to put your dog in a way bigger crate than it needs. I had United Airlines Cargo try to put my German Wirehair Pointer bitch in a 700 crate to ship her. Like, you could fit a Great Dane in there. So just know that going in and be prepared for it. Even if you think the crate that you're bringing is big enough for your dog, you might be on the safe side and just bring the next size up, because if you don't, your chances are good you're going to have to wind up buying it from the airlines. So that's just something to keep in mind. I have found that flying with your dog as checked baggage is typically a little bit easier on their regulations than when you're flying the dog cargo, but I don't think there's any particular guarantee on that either. When I'm packing to fly, and we've got the Garden coming up, we've got Orlando coming up, people are going to their nationals right now. So flying dogs isn't something you maybe do every weekend, but you're going to do it once or twice a year. When I pack to fly, I always want to have my own wheels. I hate renting those little carts at the airport. It's just ridiculous. And honestly, my dogs are typically so large that I can't fit their crate on that little smart cart. So I want to have my wheels. You can either pay to ship your wheels as extra baggage, or if they're that lightweight style, more of a wire cart that you can find, I have successfully taped those, and I mean duct taped the heck out of it, to the top of the dog's crate to get them to the intended location without having to pay an extra bag fee. Some of the new crate systems have wheels that you can put on and take off. If you have that, more power to you. You've got an impact crate or you've got a McKee crate or something like that. That's a great way to go, but not everybody has access to that. One of my favorite tips that I learned a long time ago when I was flying a dog, frozen water buckets. So the airline makes you have two containers in your dog crate for food and water. I fill two small, so say pint size for my dogs, water buckets, and I snap them onto the inside of the crate after I've had them in the freezer overnight. So they're frozen solid when I put them in the dog crate, which keeps them from spilling when the airline workers are loading them into the airplane, but will melt off a little bit and give the dog something to drink later in the day. So I've just found that to be a really handy way to keep water available for the dog. Also, if you haven't flown dogs in a while, the current regulations regarding zip tying everything shut and all of this other thing can be very frustrating if you get to your destination and you have a dog that really has to go potty and you have no way to get the zip ties off. So I try to pack a small scissor or a Swiss Army knife tool, something like that, in an easily accessible part of my checked baggage. Obviously, you can't take that through screening, so it can't go in your carry-on. But you'll generally get your checked baggage before the dog comes up into oversized baggage. That's just the way it works in most airports and most airlines. The dogs will come up to oversized baggage that will be in a different area than your checked bags that come down. You don't want your dog to come down and go around in a circle. So they'll come up over here like where the skis go. So when you get your checked bag, you go to get your dog, you've got a little something sharp to cut your zip ties so you can get your poor dog out to go to the bathroom. Truthfully, I really find it easier to travel when I'm flying if I have a couple people. When I have a dog to fly, it just is so much easier whether you're getting a rental car or whatever you're doing. Just having one extra body makes a big difference. But you can do it on your own if you need to. Little organization, little overcome and improvise. It can be done. Those wheels come in really handy when you've got a 500 crate on top of the wheels and your giant suitcase on top of the crate and going through the airport looking like a homeless person. So that's something that encourage you if you're traveling with your dog, if it's possible at all possible to have a second person. I think it does make things a whole lot easier. So the final thing that I wanted to talk about, and this one I feel pretty strongly about, a lot of the rest of it is sort of common sense and experience, but this is one that I think so many of us just never really think about. And I've been a girl on her own traveling across this country in places and times that I don't even want to discuss. And I think that we need to, as a group, as a fancy, pay more attention to this. And that is personal safety when we're traveling. So I recently, last year or so, wrote an article on this topic, and I interviewed a couple of friends of mine who are retired law enforcement officers, and I got their input on this. And again, this is sort of common sense stuff, but I just really would like everybody to think about it because we've all been in bad spots, and I think that we should pay attention to taking care of ourselves. So stay alert and aware. Pay attention to your surroundings. Pay attention to what's going on around you. If you want to look at Facebook or send a text message or do whatever, do it inside your vehicle while it's locked. If you're wandering aimlessly into the bathroom while texting, you're setting yourself up as a victim, and that's not something you want to do. Body posture has a great deal to do with how bad guys choose their victims. So head up, watchful, shoulders back. Strong core, purposeful movement. These are our first lines of defense to stay safe, whether we're driving to a dog show or driving to a movie. Stay in well-lighted, populated areas. And when we're walking dogs, we don't always think about that. We just want to find a piece of grass. But dim parking lots, deserted rest areas, these are areas where predators lurk. And situational awareness is really, really critical. Know what's going on around you. Pay attention. My one police officer friend says avoiding conflict is vastly better than fighting, and that's a really important thing to remember. He also had a good suggestion, and I don't always pay as much attention to this as I should, but keep your keys and your cell phone with you, right? You can't call for help in a bad situation if you left your phone in the car while you ran into potty yourself or the dog. You need to have that phone with you if you need to get a hold of somebody in an emergency. Car's key fob might have an alarm option on it. That's always a good one. Bad guys don't want to be the center of attention, right? So if you find yourself in something that feels inky, feels creepy, make a racket, and they are just as liable to veer off and leave you alone. Anybody that's been in a self-defense course will know, get your keys between your fingers. Worst case scenario, it'll work. As my friend said, if you have to fight, cheat, because your goal is to win and to defend yourself. Another suggestion that they had that I thought was really, really good is to stay in touch with somebody. I mean, I'm always talking to people on the phone while I'm driving, but somebody needs to know what your route is, know when you're supposed to get where you're going, and where you're supposed to be going. So having somebody to really check in with is a great built-in alarm system, because then if you don't check in, you can get that person looking or following up to make sure that you're doing okay. And then the final tip that my friends had is make use of non-lethal self-defense and deterrent options. So by this, what we're talking about is pepper spray, whistles, self-defense alarms. Not all of us, as I said, travel with an Akita by their side, which is what I did for a lot of years. And yes, I can assure you that having an Akita on a leash keeps people away. Not everybody has that opportunity. And while even maybe a barking chihuahua is going to set up enough of a racket, it's just something to keep in mind and to pay attention to. And don't just assume that the fact that you have dogs with you will keep you safe. So those are my suggestions. If you have any additional questions, feel free to touch base with us at laura@puredogtalk.com. You can also check out the podcast at www.puredogtalk.com. So thank you very much, Lee. I really appreciate the opportunity to get to talk to people.
Laura, thanks. Those were great tips. You had some in every category that I thought were really tremendous takeaways. Something as simple as don't leave your dogs unattended. The professionals always have an assistant with the dogs at the rig, but owner-handlers often don't have that luxury of having a second or third person around. So it takes a little more effort and planning, as you say, but that's a great suggestion. Also, I think that more owner-handlers should have the temperature alerts.
Yes.
And alarms on their phone. It's very little money for a tremendous peace of mind and possible aversion of a disaster.
Agreed.
Yeah, I love Alaska too. And I was laughing when you were talking about that because my last trip was to our national. And I was that quasi homeless person with the bag on top, the dog stuff in the crate, the wheels, the carry on, the pocketbook.
Been there, done that, sister.
I thought, okay, I think I'm driving next year. And when I had Rottweilers, I used to freeze the water buckets before shipping, and I had totally forgotten about that. So thanks for bringing that up. That's a great suggestion, and it's also great for those longer trips in the car where yep. they may not start out thirsty, but sometimes the car, particularly with water buckets, will shift. So I loved that suggestion. And cutting the zip ties, who thinks of that? And then you're there, and you're like, oh, my gosh. Do you have a knife?
At the airport, do you have a knife? Yeah, never a good plan.
No. And thank you so much for covering the personal safety tips for us who are on the road. I know that it's not just the ladies, but also some men have encountered some issues. I, too, was traveling with large dogs for many years, and now I have cute, fluffy-looking dogs that are, yeah, maybe the barking will stop somebody from getting too involved, but not sure they're really intimidating looking. So avoiding it in the first place through your body posture. I took a course a number of years ago on self-defense, and that was one of the first things they said was, when you're walking, you walk like you're walking the walk. And you strut and you hold yourself up and look like you're not to be messed with. So thank you for that tip as well. This has been tremendous, Laura. I'm so delighted that you were willing to come and take time to speak with the Dog Show Mentor members. And again, if you'd like to learn more about Laura or what she does to help dog show people, go to yourdogtalk.com. And thanks, Laura.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation, Lee.
This is Lee Whittier, your dog show mentor, signing off. Bye, everybody.
All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. And Allison, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
I think that today we are going to talk about naughty, naughty, bad dogs. I think that's what, I'm pretty sure that's what we're talking about today.
Right. So today I wanted to talk to you about dogs that chew. So they might be chewing their beds on the way to the dog show. They might be chewing their hair or their ear wrappers or other wraps or rubber bands if they are like a poodle or another breed that is wrapped. So, you know, chewing beds, you could take their bed away, but it doesn't really teach them anything. But when they're starting to chew their hair, that can be another problem altogether. So that's what I thought I put together. I've had a lot of people actually ask me about this problem recently, like through Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. So I thought that it would make a good podcast. So first of all, any dog that is going to chew its hair, you do have to make sure there isn't an underlying reason, right? So we're just going to assume for the sake of argument that your dog doesn't have like a food allergy or, you know, an allergy to the shampoo or products that you're using, or maybe picked up, God forbid, a flea or a tick at a dog show or in the park or something. So we're just going to pretend that we've taken care of all of those avenues and that isn't our underlying problem. But please be sure that that isn't your underlying problem. So then going forward, if your dog is chewing off their hair or chewing on an ear wrap, I have literally tried everything. I have tried bitter apple, bitter yuck, my own cocktail of bitter apple, bitter yuck, tea tree oil, Tabasco, everything. I have tried them all. And through my veterinarian, who had a Leonberger that literally ate all the baseboards in his house twice.
Oh my God.
I found out about a product, and it's made by horse people, and it's made for horses that crib or chew on their stalls, right? Which,
right.
I mean, clearly horses are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, not that our dogs aren't worth that to us as well, but you need to stop them, and you need to stop them quickly. So the product is by a company called Equus, which is E-Q-U-I-S-S, and it is called McNasty. And let me tell you, this is the nastiest stuff you have ever used. It's completely natural. It is completely fine for your dog. It is full of pepper. Capsicum is its main ingredient. So it's not expensive. It comes in a big bottle because it's used to doing horse stalls. And I have to tell you my user tips and tricks. They are: use it only outside. Even if you are using it on your dog, you must use it outside because it hangs in the air of your kennel or house forever. And once you breathe it in, you will cough a lung up.
Oh my gosh.
I am not kidding. So I have sprayed it on dog beds. I have sprayed it like on a leg that a puppy poodle is chewing. I spray it on little pieces of J cloth and then put it on a wrapper, like an ear wrapper or a coat wrapper. But you must spray it outside, A. Or if I spray it on a dog bed, I take the dog bed outside, I soak it down, and then I bring it inside, let it dry, then give it back to the dog. Problem two, if you remember, please wear a pair of disposable gloves like you might have to wash dishes or something, because one of the first times I used McNasty, I used it, and even though I had then washed my hands, I itched my eye and I cried for a day and a half.
Oh my gosh.
So when I am telling you that this stuff is nasty, but the good news is that it instantly works, right? Like,
right.
I've had dogs that destroy a bed in 30 seconds. I've taken their bed out. I've sprayed it down with McNasty, wait for it to dry, give the bed back to the dog, and I'll walk in 2 minutes later and the dog is frothing at the mouth and not chewing the bed anymore. It fixes them because then they're like afraid to do it again, right?
Right. And we assume this is not dangerous to the dog, right? So that's the important piece.
It is just pepper. Right? It is just capsicum. It's totally natural. It was my veterinarian that recommended it to me. So that's why I'm not afraid. But it is just, the pepper is, I'm telling you, it is strong stuff. And McNasty is a great name for it. So if you have an extreme chewer that you think might be chewing partially to anxiety, I would like you to talk to your veterinarian first. But one thing that I have used in conjunction with McNasty, so I kind of do both at the same time, is a Bach, B-A-C-H, flower remedy. So they're all natural homeopathic remedies, and I use white chestnut.
Interesting.
And the theory behind it is that some dogs chew hair because there's something like missing from them or anxiety, and the white chestnut kind of combats the anxiety and also the physiological act of chewing.
Interesting.
So dogs that chew, my favorite go-tos are McNasty and white chestnut.
I love it. Okay. Allison, thank you so much for your tip of the week to give our listeners the leading edge in showing their dog. McNasty is awesome. So a quick reminder, listeners, don't forget, if you are interested in partaking in one of Allison's amazing classes at the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy, if you type in the little box, Pure Dog Talk 25, when you check out, you will save 25% off the registration. So I'm saying this is better than at least a Starbucks trip. You know, it's thank you very much, Allison. We will talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Alora. Talk to you next week.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.